Good. Come back. Come back. Okay. What did you come up with, if anything? What was that like? We've never done this. Either to just do a paired, deliberately paired with the same gender, or just to consider this question. How was that? Interesting. Such an ambiguous stretch of a word. It's like the ultimate latex word, right? You know. Interesting.
Interesting. More than interesting. I find it quite tantalizingly provocative.
This is like fancy versions of interesting. Tantalizingly provocative. Yes? More?
I think I learned something. In
tell me, because I didn't.
Quite a few things. For one thing, I interacted with Tom. I've seen but never spoken to before. And you know, my first choice would have been to interact with you or a woman. But that just would have thinned my easier. So that was cool. That you made that suggestion, because it was extremely good for both of us.
I found it interesting, too.
Okay. We have no idea yet what was interesting. Exactly. It's very distanced. Now, maybe it's just statistically associated with your gender, but this is very distanced. The communication, right? Okay. Well, no, I'm not picking, but is distance, like you said, Jen, right? Men, right? Distanced. It's sort of a distanced account. We still have no idea what was interesting other than it was interesting.
I think that's being directed at me. Is that right?
It's like when I ask my son, how was your day, sweetheart? He goes, good. Yes. Good. Great. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? It was really good. Great. But if I ask my daughter that, she's like, oh, we had this really great conversation, and we did this, and we did that, and it's a very different way of communicating. And it's all right. I think that as a woman asking a man, I would like the male counterpart, whether it's my son or a male friend, to be a little more expressive. But the bottom line is that level of expression is very different. It's a very different way. It's not a good, it's not a bad, it's just the way it is. And just in them being able to say, it was a really good day. It was like, wow, that's awesome. That must mean a lot for him to even say it was a good day. Like, it means a lot. I'm not, before I used to feel like encouraging him to tell me a little bit more, and now I'm okay. I can be okay with him just saying, it's a good day.
That's interesting. So we're already in the deep end of the pool, right? Including, we're talking about how we practice, not just with our gender, but with their gender. Right? Isn't that kind of interesting? You're still thinking over there, Bill. We'll come back. We'll come back. Okay. Gabrielle?
It turns out that we were born the same year, 1950, but it was a good year.
You guys have a few beers afterward, right?
Back in the days when, it hasn't really evolved all that much, but back in the days when the choice was John Wayne or Tiny Tim. And what I found out very early in my spiritual practice was that I tried different paths, and I even hung out with the Hare Krishna for a little while in Amsterdam, and realized that bhakti was just not going to do it for me. Bhakti being that open-hearted approach to, it just didn't work for me. But as soon as I opened the three pillars of Zen. And we're talking Rinzai Zen, yeah. Macho, hard-ass type of Zen.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun.
You're home, right?
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, I'll see what's going on with the wall. Sure. I'll suffer. It's okay because. How I was brought up, and we agreed that there was something we had in common, that somehow those more macho approaches to spirituality were more congenial, more comfortable in an odd way.
Mm-hmm. Right. I will say, a friend...
I was speaking for you, but maybe you should speak.
Hard act to follow.
Well, I'll just tell you this little part. Speaking of coming home, you know, I literally heard two of my friends say this to each other. One friend was saying, he said, yeah, I feel like I've got my head up my ass. And the other friend said, yeah, it's great to be home again. So, beware coming home again. But anyway, Harold, rescue us, please.
First of all, the question I never thought of. But what I got to pretty quickly was thinking, well, whatever my jitter has brought to everything in my life, that's what I brought to practice.
So say that again?
It wasn't as if something special was brought from my jitter to practice. I mean, it's the same me that went to marriage or my education or relationships with friends. So it wasn't a special thing to find out about. But focusing on it in terms of practice makes you see what you brought to everything else. Mm. So it was an interesting question. And I think the thing I got to in talking with Gabrielle was that being a little uncomfortable with the John Wayne stuff as a kid made me uncomfortable with being male. Mm. And so that got brought to a lot of things. Because I wasn't ever comfortable with the John Wayne, that's what I'm supposed to be model. It just didn't work. Couldn't be that anyway. So I think that a little bit of ambiguousness.
Yeah.
About how to approach practice is something that's been there.
And
a lot. It's been in a lot of things.
Yeah. Thank you. Interesting. Yeah, gender is very central. I, for a long time, I had my offices in San Rafael, and one of my colleagues in that suite worked with transgendered people. And she herself was transgendered. And it was interesting to watch people go through the process in the waiting room over many long months, and then finally tip over and suddenly they're dressed differently, and they've made that turn. And it, you know, for something to be unsettled or discontented in your life, gender really gets pretty close to home. Yeah. Anyway, in the back, yeah, only men so far. Yeah, except for you. You did. Yeah,
strong
yeah.
Man, I guess.
Yeah, you have a strong man. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Okay, Larry.
Well, I don't know whether it's inherently gender. I mean, I've asked you the feminine, but and maybe this is what you're talking about from John Wayne. Meditative practice requires you to be present with what is, with your body, with your emotions, your thoughts, and such. I learned at a very early age to just suck it up. If I was feeling pain, you know, emotional pain or physical pain, and move forward, right? And don't show the pain. And pretty soon that can graduate all the way to don't feel the pain. And then the practice is asking you to feel everything, feel what is.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like what I, as a male, walk through life with and bring to the practice and bring to life in general.
Yeah.
And I guess another aspect of that is that if you bury feelings so much that you're not aware of them, you displace the reaction. Sometimes you're mad at A, but take it out on B and so forth, which is another unfortunate thing that comes out of this, whether it's a male acculturation thing or whatever it is, you know, it's just not healthy.
Sure. Thank you. A woman, maybe, perhaps? Yay, Tarne.
Well, one of the things that came up for us was, you know, the Buddha did walk out in his pregnant life. And I wonder what Buddhism, what the framework would look like if the Buddha was feminine.
That's a wonderful question. You mean the historical, Siddhartha, yeah.
Yeah, Siddhartha.
We're female.
We're female instead. What would the whole framework look like? Because this going into seclusion and becoming dispassionate and homeless, yeah. You know, and it's sort of a retraction.
Yeah.
Instead of a real immersion, like you might see from a feminine perspective.
Correct. And it's profoundly interesting. It just made me realize the obvious, which is of all the great, the major religions in the world, not one has a female founding figure. You know, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, the Buddha. Hinduism goes so far back, it doesn't really have a founding figure, but the major figures, that's very interesting. Do you have any further thoughts about that? Like what might have happened? And the Buddha did go into experience, which you could say. I mean, he really went into the body. I mean, as you well know. But you're right, he did it in seclusion, or in homelessness. So.
And I think
so imagine how would a woman have done that? Maybe.
I think it's also an option for a woman to withdraw and go into seclusion. We're very connected, and we're community-oriented. We give birth, we can walk away.
Yeah.
We're not wired to do that. And so that, I think, his ability to walk away.
So in a time of great need.
Mm-hmm.
In a time of great need, yeah. Of community support.
Yeah.
And support.
And a woman doesn't do that.
But the woman would bear it like she did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It makes me think as well about really provocative, a study I read once which tracked the base rate of single mothers in America against time. And what you see is this, from your side, this graph is totally flat. It's like about 4% at any moment. And they were single mothers very, very briefly, usually just transiently until they stabilized in some setting. They went back to live with their parents or their dead husband's family, or they remarried really quickly, or something happened. Because single mother was an oxymoron throughout most of human time, because you could not provide for a young child and get food for that child. You couldn't do it together, you needed a mate. It's only recently that we've actually had single mothers as a social phenomenon. So I just think, again, that goes to your point. It would be very difficult for a woman to support herself. Although it is also interesting, the Buddha was supported, by offerings of people. But it's so interesting to reimagine it.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that novel. Someone should write that. To reimagine Siddhartha, or we have to have a name, Cindy. Cindy Hartha. Cindy Hartha. The Cindy Hartha rag. Okay. Another woman, maybe? Gender balance?
Reconcile as a child that's born into a situation, how do they hold their father knowing that the father abandoned mother carrying the baby? How can you hold that human being as the supposed, receiver of wisdom and yet neglected the most fundamental aspect of human life, your home first? Before anything else.
How do you answer that question? I mean, if you play with the historical story, it's not clear to me whether Siddhartha, we'll just call him that, was probably late 20s, left during the pregnancy or shortly thereafter. I mean, it is known that the name given to his son was Rahula, which means fetter. Isn't that an interesting name for a son? Fetter. Fetter meaning like a chain link, a lockdown. Right? Okay, so with that is the...
Like a ball and chain.
A ball and chain, yeah. And also the setting, too, historically. It was a feudal, tribal, clan-based situation where it was a well-to-do family, if you will, and there was a lot of social support there. Not defending, just facts. So in that context, how do you think about your own question? How do you imagine this historical Siddhartha going into homelessness, leaving everybody?
My husband left me when I was pregnant.
Yeah, so how do you understand your historical spiritual teacher doing that to his wife and son?
It's very sad for me.
Wow. I mean, it's like a contradiction for you?
My husband was a very powerful man.
Well, I don't mean about your husband.
With, you know, but just like the figure of it.
Yeah.
How can you have a figure that is so wise?
Right.
Supposed to hold the keys mm-hmm. of life, of love, compassion.
Yeah.
All of the keys of what we want for enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a very tough thing to hold.
Yeah, I do not have a glib answer for it. I think hanging in there, like you're doing so well, is key. It's engaging the question.
It's taking in the good. Mm. That's what saves me every day, is taking in the good.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Yeah, how about you in the back? Say your name, okay?
Jess.
Jess, right.
I just want to say that when Siddhartha left, he wasn't the Buddha.
Right.
That's one point. You know, maybe he would have done the same thing had he had all those keys to wisdom and compassion. So that's one way that I try to understand how that happened. But I think it's good that that happened in a way, because it doesn't make it so easy for us. He was human. He wasn't perfect. And he learned a lot of stuff, and he, you know, we're trying to look at that and learn it too. But it doesn't come from this perfect God thing.
Right.
It comes from a human.
Yeah, that's true. That's historic, and it is also historically true that he reconciled with his family,
mm-hmm.
and they were well cared for. But which doesn't take away what happens when you abandon your family and young child for half a dozen years, 7 years, roughly. Yeah, Nancy.
Well,
and then we'll end crisply and briskly.
Are you talking about Buddha as if he were a man of our time, whereas he was a man of his time and his age, and the so-called the nuclear family had not developed then, the whole family situation was quite different then, and a different understanding relationships, and so I think you have to go into a lot of that to understand it. Mm. Understand it. But you're talking about him as if he had the values, and everyone had the values that we have, whereas they didn't.
I don't know if I am. I don't think you are talking about him in that way. I think we're just you beautifully surfaced that which has been raised by a number of people. Of course, it's an obvious fact, you know, to come to terms with. But I think your point is completely valid too, of course. We have to beware the pitfall. I don't think we had fallen into the pitfall, but I think we have to beware the pitfall of evaluating him by standards that developed 2,500 years later. You know, I think it's a perfectly valid point. Well, how about this was wonderful. Okay, Harold, last word, and then let's sit and end.
Not to be quite so crisp, but the whole idea that was deeply exploring his past lives and karma and trying to figure out what took him forward was really following that. So that's hard to reconcile with the way we look at things today.
Yeah. It's to pick up on Tarnay's point, how would we wrestle with this question if Siddhartha were Cindy Hartha, who left her baby, who walked away on the day her baby was born. I mean, think of the Buddha or Siddhartha walking away, hypothetically. Let's make it dramatic.
Yes.
You know, Siddhartha walks away on the day his son is born. Okay? Then let's make Siddhartha the mother leaving the baby to be cared for by the father and his clan. You know, how would we regard that teacher, that person? Really interesting. It really kind of gets at our standards and double standards. It's very interesting. I've personally seen that because I work with families, of course, that the dads who, the mothers who abandon their young children and then want to come back later to reconcile are judged much more harshly in the culture and I think in the legal system than fathers who abandon their young children and then come back and want to reconcile years later. So it's It's an example of the double standard. This is good. And then how do we practice with those injustices? How do we practice with them when we're on the receiving end of them? And how do we practice with them when, frankly, we are privileged by virtue of our gender? In certain settings, females are privileged. In many settings, males are privileged, just automatically. We didn't earn it, but we get a leg up just by virtue of our gender. How do we practice with that, too? These are good questions. Let's sit for a minute with them. May our efforts help free ourselves and others from suffering and its causes. Thank you. Thank you. See you next week.